Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Good to hear from you. We're getting ready to talk some text. We are here. We are at Palm Passion Sunday. These are the texts for April the 13th, 2014, as we kick off our preparations for Holy Week. This Sunday always provides a challenge, doesn't it, Bubba? And I know it kind of depends on the situation of our listeners, and actually I'm going to invite you to talk a little bit about that. The situation for preaching when we've got a wide swath of texts to choose from today, and it depends in your tradition whether you're going to have some other Holy Week observances or whether you've got to kind of get the whole Palm Passion in on one Sunday before, you know, everybody comes back in next Sunday on Easter and, you know, all such as that. So talk about that a little bit, and then talk about how we can think about preaching for today.
Well, yeah, you know, of course, this used to always just be Palm Sunday years and years ago, long before I started being a liturgical preacher 30 years ago. So it was Palm Sunday, and then they decided Sunday the Passion, Palm Sunday, I think, as a way of recognizing people weren't turning out in droves on Good Friday to hear the Passion story. And so what you ended up with is people coming on Palm Sunday and the triumphal entry and this sort of thing. And if the preacher wasn't observing that triumphal entry is followed by Holy Week, then you'd have people come on two triumphal days without the cross in the middle as an effect, particularly traditions where either they didn't have a tradition of having Maundy, Thursday, Good Friday, that sort of thing, or where attendance, as I said, had pretty well dwindled in a lot of ways. So this Sunday is a good way. I think it's a good thing is to say we're at the end of Lent, and Lent has been building toward the crucifixion. And to see this as not a mashing together of two things, but a continuation of a particular theme, which has been glorification and crucifixion fiction going hand in hand a little bit through this Lent. And I'll talk about that in a little bit later on preaching options, but to see it as a whole and figure out how to deal with that. Most churches have some kind of processional kind of piece. So there's a gospel that goes with that. Then you got this extremely long passion gospel. Even the short version is a long version.
Right.
And a couple of other lessons, the Isaiah and the Philippians are obviously chosen, to go with the passion narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you got to think through, what am I going to do today?
Yeah.
So,
well, and I resonate with that, having sort of come up in a tradition that I never heard anything about Good Friday, Maundy, Thursday. Let me take that back. Occasionally, Good Friday, and especially in Western Tennessee, we began to hear a little bit more about community services on Good Friday. But to be real honest, in most of the places where I was, even the Good Friday service wanted to hurry up and get to the resurrection. It was like we were uncomfortable with all of this passion stuff and thinking about this. So I was very much in a tradition that went from Palm Sunday to Easter, and it was all triumph all the time. Sound like you know, a radio station or something. Gospel radio, all triumph, all the time. But as I became aware through the years and began to experience and understand more of what's happening during Holy Week and experience the passion, I've been fortunate to be able to have my folks respond. And the Maundy Thursday service at our church had been better and better attended. And people are beginning to get it. Even so, I'll have probably 70% of my congregation that'll be there on Palm Sunday and will be back on Easter. So it is a consideration, and we want to handle it carefully.
Well, the second question you have to ask yourself today, both in terms of planning liturgy and in terms of planning what you preach, and, you know, in my tradition, and particularly in the tradition I'm serving right now in the Episcopal Church, there's not a lot of options liturgically. It's Palm Sunday. This is what you do, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about, what do you wish to accomplish? As my brother, the architect, always says, form follows function.
Right.
You need to always, rather than, we have to do this form, and what it accomplishes is not our problem. Sometimes you really have to think about what do you want to accomplish with that which you have flexibility with, in order to structure this in such a way that you accomplish them. So for me, what I'd like to accomplish is not a kind of separated and kind of schizophrenic, oh, here's the triumph, and here's the crucifixion, and how could those people who praised him on one day, a few days later, and the fickleness of faith, those are some things. That's not a pretty, there's some of that. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a larger picture I'd like to push toward for me. But there are other things you might want to do. So I want to walk through some options for how to handle this on Sunday, if I may.
You All may, right? Because it's at least half your show. and I'm good with that. So,
well, first of all, if you've not already picked a strategy to accomplish your function, it's time now. And make sure you have an idea about what it is you're trying to accomplish, what I'm saying. And the strategy is for, you can do the processional gospel and the psalm and do the procession and then sing an entrance hymn and then go right to the other lessons and then do a much shortened gospel lesson. That is, go through this and pick a make your own pericope. Mm-hmm. 10 or 11 verse pericope, and preach a regular homily and make reference to the other things and move. That's a strategy rather than reading the whole thing. That would be a strategy if you have a fairly if you're confident in a fairly decent turnout for Maundy Thursday and Good Friday, that people are going to go through mm-hmm. some of the effect of Holy Week. You can that's one strategy. Another strategy is do pretty much the processional, mm-hmm. the other lessons, gospel, and the other lessons, then not read a second gospel. No, don't read a passion gospel, mm-hmm. and preach primarily on basically an old-fashioned Palm Sunday.
Right.
And go with that as much as you can, if you'd like to. Another option, do the processional gospel, do the other lessons. If you're going to do this, you should have already decided to do it. I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. We should have mentioned it sooner. There are dramatic readings available, including in a book, the Revised Common Lectionary Episcopal Edition, which is a short form book that divides this out by narration. You mm-hmm. have a narrator, the Judas, the high priest, and it's already divided. You can find this in lots of places mm-hmm. and get a reader's theater group, and you may have them positioned depending on the size of your worship space as to whether they need amplification of their voices or not. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's very effective when you have people in the congregation standing up and reading, as long as everybody can hear them and you right. practice this. Mm-hmm. And when you're done with that longer version done by narration, that's the proclamation of the gospel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you, I would just have to say, if you're going to try to read the longer version, even the Episcopal book says people may be seated until. if you're going to do it instead of trying to just stand up through the whole thing, but just be aware, I don't think most modern folks can or comprehension. They're mostly going to be worried about, when is this over?
Somebody, yeah, they're going to tune us. They're going to tune you out. It is a long time to listen.
It's too long to listen
to a single voice. That's right.
Single voice, even the best reader, and most of mm-hmm. us have to own that we're not the best readers.
Right.
So
I can't borrow James Earl Jones for this day. So
no.
If
you're going to do the whole thing, do it with multiple readers and good readers. Mm-hmm. So it flows and it's almost an art to it. Those are the options. My just personal experience is the shortened version that the lectionary calls for, and maybe just a portion of that with a shorter sermon, is a good option. Doing the procession, I mean, that shortens, I'm talking liturgy here, but that shortens the entrance rite. You do the procession, you sing a hymn, and then you do the prayer of the day, and you're right into the lessons.
Right.
So that it replaces rather than adds to. But this gospel lesson makes it difficult to preach very, very fulsomely.
Right.
This. So.
And then there's perhaps another option.
Yeah, and my theory is you read whatever part of the I'm going to read. I mean, you do the whole processional gospel and the procession and the Hebrew Scriptures lesson and the Philippians lesson and Psalm 31 and whatever part of the Passion Gospel you feel comfortable doing. Mm-hmm. That and then you come and preach a sermon on the Philippians text, that
right.
classic text about he descended to not count equality with God as a thing to be grasped, you know, and going through all wonderful stuff with it, and then use the day and the other text as your illustrative material.
Right.
You know, he did not count quality to be grasped, and then you see him coming in, and he comes in triumphal and although he's humble, and he's letting go of all of that. Right. And then that humbling, and you know, it works.
It does work, because then you've got all of the scripture and all of the story, and let's be honest, most people that are going to be listening to us, they've been here before. They've got the idea, okay? And so all of that situated in their minds and all of that literally standing behind you as the preacher with background, you sort of take this Philippians text and set it in the midst of that. And it really does make it nice to be able to refer literally or just let the text and the images do the work themselves.
Yep.
And you're able to then concentrate instead of worrying about bringing all of these details from all of these texts, and particularly the long gospel, into your sermon. Those are just sort of resident there, and you can work with a much more succinct text in Philippians chapter 2. Yeah.
Yeah. Work with that text. And there's another piece you can do that it's kind of a summation that for this season, but I just really think it's well, and you can do it short form, but and I just worked through it, is going saying, this is the day toward which all the gospel lessons in Lent have been pointing, mm-hmm. and been pushing us. You have the baptism and the temptation, glorification and crucifixion. Nicodemus, the Son of Man must be lifted up. What does that mean? Must he be glorified? Must he be crucified? The woman at the well. Some believed and was glorified. But the prelude is, why is he in Samaria? He said he had to go through Samaria because they began to plot against him. And he had to get out of there. And the reason he had to go through Samaria is he had to get out of there in a hurry. Mm-hmm. Going back to Galilee in the first few verses of chapter. The man born blind from birth. Oh, all the recognition he got. But you see, it becomes more obvious in the text. There's something. We got to get this guy. He's been glorified and crucified all the way through. And then Lazarus, oh, the glory. He's back in town. And Thomas hints at it when he says, let's go with him and we'll die with him. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, the plot begins, and that's when Gamaliel says it's better that one man die than all of us die. For Lazarus to live means for Jesus to die. This has been the buildup throughout Lent, and we come to this day when it's all there, the glorification and the crucifixion. Now that to me is a kind of an interesting way to work through this and saying this is where Jesus' mission and ministry from baptism to today has been leading. This is not a surprise. This is not like everybody went along, hey, Jesus, hey, you cool. What? They killed him?
Yeah. No, that's it. And I think that's a really nice move right there. And possibly even another option here is the sort of summary of where we've been and how this text does bring us to the moment. And, you know, lets us go back and everything we've been building and working on and positing during Lent. And again, all you have to do is just as you did, mention those stories and we're back with the woman at the well. We're back with the blind man. We're back at the grave, the tomb with Lazarus. And that's to me, a very potential and powerful approach as well.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. How did we get here? And why are we here? And this is what will happen this week. And then, you know, if you're going to see people again on Thursday and or Friday and maybe Saturday or very early Sunday, you just continue to bring all of that with you. I think the challenge for us, and I'll again speak mostly from my experience, is to give people a sense of this Holy Week as we stand here this day. And to my purpose is going to be to try once again to remind people we do not move simply from triumph to triumph. Something happens in between. Important stuff happens, just as important things have been happening. And to just again emphasize everybody that we're sitting in the midst of this incredible story. And this is not just, you know, sort of, well, this happened, then that happened, and it kind of all worked out. No, there's a powerful buildup here.
Right.
Perhaps in the eternal plan of God, if you want to go that direction, certainly simply in the way the story is told, it builds. And we don't want to skip any of it, because when we come back on Easter Sunday, the resurrection is all the more powerful if we have carefully sought to walk our way with Christ.
One Wednesday night in Lent, we've been doing theologies of the cross, different ways of understanding what happened on the cross, and going through penal substitution and role exemplar, those sorts of things. And I did one on Christus Victor, and talked about the particularly the Eastern Orthodox understanding that the incarnation just as important as the death and crucifixion and resurrection, that the saving act began in the very fact of God becoming human, and talked about Jesus' whole from beginning to end, based off the Philippians, that from beginning to end, that's what Jesus was about. And I had a woman who's joined the Episcopal Church in the last few years and a long time, Church of God and Baptist, and he came to me and said, "The first time I understand what Jesus meant when he said, 'It is finished.'"
Hmm.
And I had mentioned that night. She made that connection of saying, "This is what I came for."
Right.
And now it is finished. And what I was thinking about with that, besides, A, you never know what somebody's going to get from what you say, i.e. what God's going to say through you that you didn't know you knew.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. But the other one is, I was thinking, there are wonderful lines throughout here to hang a sermonic piece on. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you which one to pick.
Right.
Well, that's a suggestion I'm going to make is, as a preacher, read through, particularly the Passion piece, and see if something just grabs you in such a way it won't let you go.
Yep.
And that can become a repetitive piece that you hang this movement through, like the five weeks of Lent leading up to this. You know, my frame is glorified or crucified. That's not out of the text, but I might find something that'll go with it. What does it mean to be lifted up? You know, and those sorts of things. That's a piece of a way to get at this week.
Well, a little bit different approach we've been taking today, but I hope this is helpful. We have purposely not tried to dig into these gospel texts and really do any exegesis or analysis of the text much. And we're going to leave that with you all this week. But it's certainly been helpful for me to think through you know, the possibilities for preaching today and to decide now which way do I want to go. And I think your comment earlier, you need to decide right up front, what am I trying to accomplish today with my folks? And for all of us as we preach, that is always one of the determining factors. We each are going to preach to folks that we know, by and large. This is the privilege and the challenge of being a preaching pastor. So we've got to think about the folks that are going to be sitting in my pews. What do we need to happen here this day? And then think through one of these approaches and take it and work it out. I like that as we're reading, you try to find what grabs you and won't let go. And as many times as you may have been through these stories, I know we have people that have been preaching. You know, some are starting out and, you know, this is your first or second or third time, you know, through this story. It's still pretty new. It's always challenging. For some folks, been preaching 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, maybe 40 years or more. I hope that all of us, no matter where we are on that spectrum, spend the time with the text and let it grab us again. Let it grab us again. And then that's a pretty good indicator of where you may need to go with the sermon on this day.
I have to tell you that, you know, I've got a Bible I keep around. Don't use as much as I used to. An old RSV Oxford annotated I bought in class at UNC Chapel Hill sometime a good 40 years ago.
That the one with your duct tape on it?
Black duct tape. It's a liturgical duct tape. Holds together.
Yeah.
And worn out. And I have to tell you, I look at that sometimes as a reminder that no matter how many times I've been through this, there's always something new. It always astounds me. Things I had never thought about, things I learned new. And I used to, when I was a young pastor, hear old ministers say that sort of thing, and I thought, what a pious pile.
And, you know, that's right.
I did.
I know.
And now you get to, you've been doing it 35 years, and it's true.
It is.
It's always speaking new. And, I have to tell you, if you're kind of bored with it and think there's nothing new there, you need to buy a new edition and a different translation or something.
Yeah.
Because it's rich. It is rich and it never quits talking.
Do something to shake yourself up and get back with this text. Well, Bubba, thanks. It's been good. Our best thoughts, wishes, and prayers with everybody that'll be preaching this week. I don't guess there's much left for us to do, Bubba.
Before I say bye, I just want to say the effect of being in New York and Princeton for the last week has had a definite effect. Now, your accent's just not as strong as it usually is.
You mean I've cleaned up my act a little bit, being up here? And,
compared to me, yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Well, wait a minute. Let me try that again then. Well, I don't reckon there's much for us to do, Bubba, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out the session with Hosanna, performed by Brooke Frazier and Hillsong United.